So, how did you all get started and where are you located?
Go ahead, you start.
I started so my family, like my dad and my uncle, had a registered Gelvie, an Angus herd. And so when I was in high school, like through FFA and stuff, I started building up my own herd there. It was just kind of a way to get our kids, for my dad and my uncle to get the kids involved and kind of have like a college fun thing sort of set up. So I had 20 head of registered cows through high school. Got into college, we were engaged. We had kind of a drought. Didn't have room for my cows back home anymore, so we were engaged. So we moved my cows down here. We were getting married, and we kind of started with that 20 head of mine from back home, I guess, and that was in 2002.
Two, one, yeah, two.
So, Kristen, there's a that FFA project and the impact that your family has had on your experience with the breed. Let's dig into that a little bit more. How did they get started with Gelbe and why was that the breed of choice and why were you so successful with your herd?
Gosh, that was so long ago. I'm gonna have a hard time remembering.
Oh, you're young.
No, there was another gentleman that lived kind of by. So I grew up west of Valentine, in Nenzel, Nebraska. Is where I grew up, and then we ended up in Scribner here. But there was another gentleman by Kilgore, Nebraska, who kind of had the Gelbe cows and kind of got my family started in it. They had cows before, but they were just kind of crossbred before they kind of got started in with the Gelbe. And it was the mark data from the U. Well, it's that's the Federal Meat Animal Research Center or whatever in Clay Center. The mark data that they had on the Gelbe breed about just being maternal and having a lot of growth and early age to puberty and things like that. So it was the mark data, I think, that kind of got them interested in the Gelbe breed in particular. On that, I guess.
Okay. And so, what are your parents' names?
Greg, GREGNOLLETTE. And so Greg Nollett and Cindy.
Okay. So you're about, if I looked at the map correctly, you're about 5 hours from there, right?
Right. Yeah. So the
Okay.
ranch at that time, it was my dad and my uncle, Tim, T-I-M, Nollett. And they had a ranch, a partnership together with the Diamond. It was called the Diamond Lazy J Ranch, at that time. Yeah. So.
And so do you still tap into the genetics from your family's herd, or have you gone kind of a different way? What does that look like these days now that you are on your own?
Yep. So pretty much as soon as I brought my cows back, for the most part, that was kind of the end of the genetic, I guess, tapping into theirs. My husband and I, we met at UNL because we both have animal science degrees. So we had refreshed out of college with animal science degrees. We were kind of more into the reds at that time, which not a lot of people had. Like 20 some years ago now. And we're both certified to AI, so we mostly just started AIing to probably a lot of Red Angus sires at that time. I think the Gelbe sire at that time was Freedom was big, and then Cherokee Canyon was the Red Angus one that was kind of big at the time, and so we just kind of started AIing. For our bull cleanup, we got some bulls from Joe Miller, Red Angus. He's out by Johnstown. I think those were kind of our first kind of cleanup bulls. But yeah, we just use AI pretty heavily. And I think our goal when we started was just we had some traits that we wanted to clean up as far as udders and things that were just really important to us. So that was our main focus, was just cleaning up some of those traits that were undesirable in the particular cows that I had, and yeah, and going from there, I guess. And our goal was kind of just to have like a 50, kind of like a 50-50. We liked the 50% Gelby, 50% Red Angus, kind of that percentage. And so usually we're trying to breed for that percentage when we started.
Okay. So, Corey, what's your history? You grew up around cattle as well?
So I'm originally from Scribner, where we actually live now. We only live about 3 miles from where my mom homesteaded, or my mom's family homestead, I should say. My dad lives there now. And so I've been around cows my whole life too. And I guess kind of when Kristen and I met, I had a few just commercial cows, and it was one of those deals where we kind of just got rid of those and focused on the registered cows, and kind of went that way, I guess. So my dad, kind of the same way, he had cattle, and I kind of ran a few together with him, and he helped us out a lot to get started, because we were still in college yet. So like the first year, he calved them out for us and took care of them. We came back on the weekends when we could, and then shortly after that, then we moved back home here, and kind of went from there, I guess, as far as developing the herd there. So
Okay, so I want to hear the love story about you two animal science majors meeting at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, and how you met and how you decided that you were the right fit. Aha.
well, we actually met in Mech Systems 109 class. That's the class that we had together. So that's where we kind of first talked. But I actually lived in the animal science building. I worked for the teaching herd, I guess. So I was there in the building all the time, and I saw her quite a bit. She was on the judging team, and just I lived in the animal science building, so I kind of knew everybody there and saw everybody. So that's kind of how I met her. And so she might have a different story, I don't know for sure, but that
What's
sounds
your
pretty good.
version?
I would agree with that. I don't know.
So,
Now, I mean,
go
I think
ahead.
for me, yeah, I mean, as far as like why I picked him, but yeah, all that story. But you know, for me, I did really enjoy the cattle side growing up, and for me, it was just kind of important to, yeah, find somebody with those shared interests. Yeah. To be able to, yeah, raise your kids that way and grow up that way. And that just really was my interest, was kind of, yeah, raising cattle and just kind of genetic improvements and things like that. So
So before kids, I mean, when we'd come back on the weekends or we work in cows, we considered it a date because we both enjoyed going to look at cattle. I mean, it sounds boring, but we just enjoyed, and I think still to this day, one of our favorite things to do is just go to the pasture and watch cows. I mean, there's something peaceful about it, and we just enjoy doing it together. So that's, I don't know, one of the things that, you know, when you're with somebody else, you have the same interest, that means a lot. So.
yes, it does. I was on the UNL meats team, and he was on the UNL livestock judging team. I did some livestock judging, but I took the class and everything, but I never did the traveling team. But yeah, livestock judging was probably also a shared interest, I suppose.
So that
Just
sounds
like
like a good combination. If you've got one that knows how to phenotypically judge them and judge the pedigrees, and the other one that understands the importance of that end product, you make a dynamic duo.
yes. Or for
So,
some arguments out in the pen, just trying to decide which ones you're going to get rid of. It can get used to get intense. It's probably less intense now, but
you're more on the same page these days.
I would say so, but I think we've kind of got our cattle to the point to where we're pretty happy with the way that they look. There's less to argue about, I think, because they're pretty a lot more even, a lot less to pick apart now than there was 20 years ago, I think. So it's less to argue about.
And I think, like, when you're on the judging team, you saw everything, but the real world experience of just being around the animals and just the experience of, picking out your replacements and your bulls, there's so many things that you see that just come so much easier to you, just from experience, I guess. So.
Yeah, sure. So, do you all work off of the farm? Do you have day jobs, so to speak?
I work for NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, which is
Okay.
an agency with USDA.
Uh-huh.
But I'm a district conservationist in the Blair Field Office. So I supervise the offices in the Papio, Missouri River NRD District.
Okay, and how about you, Corey?
I do not. So to start, I guess, when I got out of college, I worked at a feed yard for locally here, only a couple miles from where I lived. I worked there for 7 years, gained a lot of experience, about cattle in general, and also the people I worked for were very helpful as far as loaning equipment. We still to this day rent some of their pasture on corn stalks. So that's been a they've been very a very big impact, I guess, in helping us get everything going, and along with my dad also. So I did that for 7 years, then a couple odds and ends jobs. I run road grader, and then for the last how many years I had my own trucking business, which was nice. It was flexible, so you could do the cow stuff when I wanted to, and then haul grain when you need to get that done. And just recently I have I don't do that anymore. I just cut or just do my own hauling for myself. I was able to pick up some farm ground from a neighbor who retired. So that has been a very good opportunity and kind of life-changing for me and Kristen. So it's been a very good experience, put it that way. So.
Sounds great. Sounds like you're both well-rounded and complementary to one another. So tell me about your kids, what and their involvement with everything.
Go ahead.
Our oldest is Grace. She is a sophomore, also at UNO, also majoring in animal science. She's with a biotechnology option. She's also always just been really interested in genetics and like embryo transfer, things like that. I think she got just really interested in that, just seeing us AI and things like that, and just probably being exposed to that at a young age. So she really likes that. And she's also on the UNL Meats team right now, which I laugh at because she didn't really want to be like me, probably. But she's on the UNL Meats team right now, and they're doing pretty well. So she's at UNL. Aubrey, Aubrey, she is a senior at Loganview High School. She's also plans to attend UNL in the fall, with like a plant and landscape systems degree. And then Hannah is a freshman. She's our basketball player right now. She's busy with that. She does karate. Also, she did well at livestock judging. All of our kids have livestock judged all the way and participated in like FFA all the way through high school. Our oldest daughter, Grace, her team actually won the Nebraska State FFA contest in 2023, the year she graduated. So they got to compete nationally. But all of our kids have always done really well livestock judging, and that's just something that they enjoy. And then Emmett is fifth grader. He's 10.
The youngest only son who acts like he's 40, so.
Yeah. And he's outside quite a bit. He actually does a lot with the choring every single night, kind of just running the payload or loading the feed wagon, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, very active outside with the cattle and the farming and youth sports. Yeah, basketball, baseball. So,
He's very
football.
excited. His first heifer calved yesterday, so he was very excited. So,
Okay, so
yeah.
are they each building their herds similar to what you did, Kristen, or is it all staying kind of as a family affair?
It's all kind of, I should say, a family affair. We can kind of get into it, but we don't have a lot of room for a lot of expansion. So each kid has their own cow, I guess. And that's kind of how they have their own involvement. And everybody kind of follows our net, I guess.
Okay,
But,
great. So we've talked a little bit about kids and cows, but tell me more about the two 2024 Dams of Distinction and your Dams of Merit that you've raised, and help our readers and listeners understand the accomplishment that that really is.
So yeah, it's the Dam of Distinctions, Dams of Merits. I guess it's funny because we kind of lose track of them every year because there's usually a few of them, and it's kind of amazing because you don't realize that some of them cows are as old as they are and have had as many calves that have reached all the qualifications. So yeah, so the it's pretty awesome to have them cows around because those are the genetics you want to build off of and to continue to get better. So most generally, those are the ones that we make sure we keep our replacements off of. The longevity is very important, so that's one of the best things, I guess, and also being able to breed back on time and do all the stuff they need to do to make the requirements. So.
Okay.
And I think just in general, we've probably got the most cows right now as we've ever had, but especially just starting out and building, I think maybe just being pretty proud of the fact of how many we had, just the percentage of, we don't have that many cows. So that's just the overall percentage of our herd that meets Dam of Merit or Dam of Distinction, I think is that's, I think is special. To us,
I
we
would
don't have,
agree.
hundreds of cows. We don't have that many, so under 100. I think we're at, I don't know,
About 80 cows is what we have.
about 80 cows right now, but for quite a while we were probably only at maybe 50 head or so. And so just having, and I think this is maybe even the lowest number of Dam of Distinctions and Merits we've had in a while. But yeah, so for me, I think it's just a percentage of, we don't have that many cows, and so the percentage that make it is important to us. And we've always said, like, when we started, that quality over quantity was more important to us. To just make sure, because we don't have much room, every cow that we keep has to be quality.
So tell me on your quality cows then, how are you marketing the CK genetics and stock? When and how do you market your cattle every year?
So our bulls, we market them private treaty. So one of our biggest tools there is our website that we have, www.ckcattle.net. And we use that as a huge tool to attract buyers. And we put all the information that we have on each individual bull as far as performance, EPDs, anything that we have, pedigrees. And then we actually put the price right on there, so that way when people look, they know what they're pricing, where they're at, and it's amazing, that the way the internet has evolved. But we probably sell 60 to 70% of our bulls sight unseen over the internet. So to me, it's important to give as much information and pictures that we can, right there for people to look at. So that's how we market the bulls. So we do advertising locally on certain papers and Craigslist and whatever to get attracted there. And then word of mouth, I think, is one of our best advertisements, I suppose. We sell quite a few locally, but we also do go a fair distance too. So that's kind of the bulls, I guess. All of the calves, the steer calves, actually get marketed to my dad, and he feeds them out and do a lot of direct marketing to local people around here as far as buying butcher beef. So it's kind of good on our side of it, so that we can see our cattle how they finish out and how they grade and see how well they do in the feed yard. So
Yeah.
that's a good way to do that, be able to see that. So that's our steers. And then our heifers, we save all of our heifers. We cull a few of the bottom end and the top end, I guess, that are too small or too big. And then we develop all of our heifers and breed them. And we sell bred heifers every year around the first of the year, I guess. So, we'll keep our few that we want to keep, and then we sell the rest. So, and we sell those at the local sale barn in West Point, and have done rather well the last couple of years. It's been kind of a goal of ours to go, predominantly have reds. In the last couple of years, we've had a red group of heifers go through the sale ring and top the sale. So the price is great, but to me, it's more of the pride of all the reds, because that means a lot to us, because that's kind of our goal when we started, was to have really good red cattle and to build off of that. So
Okay. So, what about even though you run a smaller herd and you've kind of talked about that, you still have to deal with the customers. And I liked how you said you give them as much information as possible. But customer service beyond the sale is pretty critical, and especially if you're a small herd, every one of those people are priceless. So can you tell me a unique way maybe that you serve your customers beyond the upfront transparency?
Okay, so well, a breeding guarantee, so they every every so when somebody purchases a bull, they pay a half down, and then we do all the breeding soundness exams and everything to make sure the bull is good, and when they pay the rest, and then there's like a 90-day breeding guarantee through the season. If they have any problems, let us know. So that's one of the things that helps out. But I deliver all the bulls myself personally, and to me, that is a great way to meet with the customers. I love to talk. My kids tell me that's not always a good thing, because it could take a couple hours to drop a bull off. But it's just a great way to get to know the customers, kind of know their operation a little bit, and I think it puts them a little more of an ease too, that you're not just there to drop the bull off and fly down the road and be gone. So to me, the return customers are huge, and we have quite a few of those, and it's important to have that, I guess I kind of measure that a little bit is, before the sale or the private treaty sales even start, usually every year I have a list of guys that I have called me previously and are happy with their bulls, and they want first pick for next year. So I guess if you have that, it's telling you maybe you're doing something right, I guess. So it's good to have feedback from them, and there are instances when things don't work. So I'm more than happy to work with people and start trying to figure out if there was a problem, what we can do to fix it, and if it's on my end there or whatever it is. So I'm always willing to talk to people and work with them. So
Okay. So,
you're somewhat of a
efficient.
local expert.
What's that?
Did
I'm
you say?
sorry.
I mean, he's become somewhat of a local expert, so it seems like the new guys in the area that are new to cattle, just starting their own cattle herds, he gets quite a few pro bono phone calls that he gives advice, like everything from what cover crops to plant to if they
What?
need to come and borrow colostrum or medication or whatever after hours. So,
Hey, go to Carrie, Corey, huh?
I yep, I get some interesting phone calls, but I'm like, no question's a dumb question, I guess. I was at that point too, and it's like if you start calling yourself an old timer when you got experience and you, yep, been there, done that, so I can help you out and save you the heartache of trying 16 different things to get it to work. So, but.
So, with I know you've made management choices with having a smaller herd for efficiency and best return on your investment. And you mentioned on your website that you don't have many cows, and like we've talked about, or much room. So, kind of, can you help me understand your stocking rate and how you're managing limited pasture to get the best bang per head, or maybe what kind of pasture forages, or if you do rotational grazing? Any management things like that that have made you utilize that land to the best of your ability?
Okay, so I'll kind of go through our system on a year basis, I guess, of what we do. So Eastern Nebraska is very limited as far as grass. Most of it's farm ground. So when you find a piece of pasture, you hope you can keep it and hold it for a while because there's not a lot around. So the pasture we do have, we got a couple different ones. The ones that we're able to, we do rotational graze and try to help out with that. They're predominantly brome pastures, so our growing season is how do I say it? First part of May, it's very extreme. It grows really fast, and then it's done. So it has its challenges. It's very good feed, and there's a lot of it. But sometimes during the middle of summer, we get a little short. So the rotational grazing part of it sure helps out a lot to get some regrowth and stuff. So yeah, as far as the pastures. We usually go to grass about the first part of May, and we usually stock about an acre per or a cow per 2 acres is kind of what we shoot for. And in this area, hopefully, if the years are an average, we'll get us to about the first October. And then from there, with the abundance of corn around here, we have lots of corn stalks to graze. So usually from October, or if we can get them in earlier, we'll try to. But October through, like this year, we still got cows out on stocks yet. We're about ready to get done. So usually it's about January sometime that they'll run corn stalks. So corn stalks are probably a big key that helps us to be very efficient and profitable in eastern Nebraska. In our area, there really isn't too much of a cost as far as renting stocks. So the feed is not quite free. You still supplement protein and mineral, and you do labor to do the fences and stuff, but makes it very reasonable, put it that way. And if grazed correctly, it can be a win-win situation for us and also the owner of the corn stalks to remove some residue and clean up the volunteer corn and help the ground out, I guess. So after corn stalks, then our cows are virtually dry lotted, I guess you would say. And that's the time when we calve. So most generally in Nebraska weather, it's cold enough that you have to have them up someplace close and feed them. So for us, it works good. Pretty much February, March, April, they're in the yard, and then we feed them corn silage and hay. So that's kind of our system in a nutshell, I guess.
That's
Yeah,
pretty
what we
thorough.
struggle with is, yeah, all of our pasture is rented. We don't own any pasture. We only own, yeah, for the cows, kind of like our headquarters. But so we're always just sort of eternally grateful to the people that continue to let us rent their pasture because, yeah, we have to rent it all.
That's tough, isn't it? Be you have to have a lot of trust there.
Yes, you do. So it's a big deal, a part of it. So, and then it also kind of shapes, our breeding season. So we breed right before we go to pasture. So we got how many different smaller pastures? So it's kind of impossible to have facilities at all of them. So we virtually will AI and breed and then send them right to pasture. So it's just kind of one of those deals where, everybody's got a system and they figure out what works best as far as timing and everything. And then for us, it's about ideal for us, I guess. So.
And your heifers that you breed, they are dry lotted all summer.
Yes, they're when the, and we develop heifers, they develop them on a dry lot. on a roughage ration. Just for the simple fact, if I had grass, I'd put them on it, but it's tough to come by, so that's kind of what we do. So.
Okay. So any other management strategies that have provided the greatest benefit for you all?
I would say, you know, probably one of the biggest benefits is AIing. It's just amazing what you can do with genetics, how fast you can move one direction or another. As good as it can be, you have to be careful sometimes that if there's, you know, some genetics you use that have a trait that you didn't realize was there. So you have to make sure that you identify that and take care of that. But for the most part, AI is it's just amazing to light speed of changing genetics, I guess you would say. And it's always that deal when, you know, you AI, you got to wait 9 months for that calf and then you watch that calf grow. So it's a long couple year project before you actually see the outcome of it. So that's one thing that can be a little challenging, I guess, to see if you made the right decisions. So
we've kept some of our own bulls or had some of our own bulls collected. So if we have a bull that we really like and just really kind of fits what we like, we've had them collected and used our own bulls, and which not everybody does. And we've been really happy with those. And some of those have been some of our highest selling bulls customers. So we will have some of our own bulls collected if we like them. And every cow kind of has to earn their place. I think the hardest thing at first was, yeah, you have the cows, but you finally like the way they look and they lose a calf and just having to part with them because they don't have a calf. And yeah.
Yeah, it's always the really beautiful ones that have something go wrong.
Yep.
The one you love the most.
Yep. And probably one of the other things that I don't know if it's not really a big deal is just the diversity as far as our operation. You know, as much of a challenge it is not having grass, you know, the diversity as far as, you know, having the corn around here, having room to grow hay, we grow our own hay, alfalfa, having a diversity in feedstuff, and then also, you know, the diversity of as far as marketing. Different times of year, different animals and whatnot, all which, you know, everybody has, but you can do it different ways. So being diverse, I think, really helps out. So if something's short in one area, hopefully you can make up in another. So.
And probably the one of the biggest things management-wise is we really focus on calving ease. Calving ease and good udders, things that make it less work. Because when we were starting out, we were both working full-time jobs. And that's the stuff that you don't have time to deal with. You need everything to work well if you don't have time for it. So calving ease and just good udders and gentle cows were important. You used to have Charlet when you were with your dad, and those are some big calves, and you have to spend a lot of time getting them up and getting them to suck. Ours, you really don't have to do that. And you can probably, I don't know, you can probably count the number of calves you had to pull in the last 20 plus years, and it's probably less than 10. So that's important management wise, just for labor and that it was always important to us.
And it was a big deal because at first we started, we both had jobs. So there was times when nobody was home for half the day or whatever. So calving ease is important. And after you learn that, you know, cows with bad udders, there's no room for that. I guess there should be no reason for it. That's stuff that needs to be called and taken care of. And then disposition is another huge thing. When you're young, you're like, oh, I can deal with it. Then after a while, it's like, oh, we'll get rid of that cow. And it's just amazing how much easier it makes things. And what I really enjoy about it is customers coming to look at bulls. And I get a lot of compliments as far as disposition. You know, we can walk in the pen, there'll be three or four of us in there and two dogs walking around and the bulls are just standing there. And, you know, usually one comes up and starts licking you and whatnot all. And it's just, it's a huge thing because, you know, there's so many people that, you know, like, I hate it when the bulls are crazy. And I says, yeah, I know it's one of our deals. If we notice something like that when we're making our calls, No matter how good the bull looks, it's just not worth it because one wild one can throw the whole pen up, and I don't want to pass it on to a customer because it just creates problems for them too. So I always look at it, if it's something that I wouldn't want, I don't want them to have it either. So.
Okay, so if you had to be known for one thing, and I guess you're going to have to agree on this, what would you want it to be and why?
Well, I
And
guess.
maybe you don't have to agree. You might have two different ideas.
Well, I guess part of it is I want to be known for our red genetics, but put it this way, honesty is, and I mean, an honest red genetic supplier, I guess you would say. I guess it's important to be honest with people as far as what you're selling them. It's big to us to, have good cattle, but if you're going to pass your genetics on, you want to make sure you're passing on, what people are wanting or expecting that you're trying to sell them, I guess. It's cavities, you don't want to be dishonest and skew your, oh, that calf was 80 pounds and you write down 70 pounds. No, you write down what it was, and because sooner or later it's going to come back and bite you. So just with any kind of weights, any kind of disposition problems or anything. So it's being honest with the customer. I guess you kind of learn throughout life, being honest gets you a lot further than trying to be the other way. So
Okay.
I don't know if you agree with that, but.
That's a lot wordier than what, how I would have put it, but yeah. I think for me, it's just the quality of the red genetics, because I think especially when we started, it was just hard, especially with the Gelby breed, there was so much Angus, put into it. There was a lot of black ones, maybe a lot of good black ones, but it just seemed like it was hard to find a good red Gelby that was, phenotypically what you wanted and all that. And we've got some heifers out there right now, purebred Gelby that I just, and purebred red Gelby bulls in recent years that I think were really pretty great, that I think are just hard to find because everybody chased black for so long. It was just hard to find the good red ones. So I think for me, it's, yeah, which is what you said at the beginning, just having the quality red genetics, the red quality red Gelbies and red balancers.
I can agree with that. I'll agree with
Oh, this is why you guys are, get along and have done well.
that.
Okay, so we're about done here. What new innovations or opportunities are you looking to pursue down the road? What's next in the next 1 to 3 years for CK Cattle?
Good question, I guess. I guess one thing that both of us, with her being a conservationist, everything, we're both big on our like soil health, I guess. So cover crops have been kind of, we were just at a seminar here a couple months ago and talking about the profitability of grazing cover crops over growing corn and soybeans. So I think it might be one of those things that, since we're short on grass, might be one of those new deals to kind of start looking at other options to run cattle more efficiently and economically. So yeah, that's one thing I kind of see. And, along with that, that's really intrigued me is the new fencing collars that they put on cows. So you can, I'm trying to think of the name of what you actually call them.
Virtual fence.
Virtual
Yeah.
fence. There you
Yeah.
go.
Just wrote an
So
article about that in our January issue.
yes. So that's very intriguing to me. So as far as being able to rotational graze, and then it's one of those deals where yes, I see how it evolves and kind of go from there. But like for us in the fall of grazing corn stalks, we spent a lot of time putting fence in because there's no permanent fences around here. So we put a lot of fence in. So I think with having cattle that are very calm dispositions, that they could train to it and hopefully not have to put up a whole lot of fence. So that's one thing that kind of intrigued me this last meeting that we were at and saw. So that'd be something to kind of look into, I think. So.
And that concerned me because he's never going to get rid of his cows. I'm like, you'll be 80 years old in your recliner and still having your cows if you can do virtual fencing. And I'm like, what are you going to do when your grandkid gets a hold of your phone and just starts scribbling? I don't know. But
Oh, yes, there's a
I
lot
would
of
say,
unknowns.
yeah. I mean, probably one of our other goals that we haven't met yet, and we just probably really haven't had time to pursue it, but just we still have, yeah, like I said, we collect our own bulls and we've got some, probably plenty of semen that we can't use ourselves. We've always maybe tried, just marketing that better or maybe getting them listed, with sites that sell Gelby genetics just so that we can sell more semen. We've just never probably had the time or whatever to pursue that, but
Okay, so is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would still want to share about your experience with the breed or with your own personal operation?
I guess one of the things about the breed, and I know there's other breeds that kind of that same deal too, is the balancers is, I think, just a pretty awesome way to crossbreed. It's simple. You get the best of continental breed from the Gelby and the British breed from the Angus side, and when you put the two together, it just complements so well. So I just like to put a big kick out there for the balancers. Being in the breed, we all know what it is, but sometimes it's one of those deals that not everybody knows what a balancer is for sure. And so I think it's huge. It's a great way to put some extra pounds on calves and carry on traits from each breed that do well. So.
Okay.
And probably always, I mean, just the fertility with the Gelby. I know we ran into so many when trying to find like Angus sires and things like that. Just having a hard time getting good conception rates, or they might say, oh yeah, we had a hard time collecting that bull, or yearling bulls with less than desirable scrotal size or whatever. We've had plenty of times where our vets come out and they're like, this is, yeah, pretty fertile bull for as young as they are. So fertility, I think, with the Gelby is just big. Yeah. And about our kids, I mean, they've all been in 4-H and shown like cattle throughout their years or had bucket calves and things. I don't know if we mentioned that, but that's probably about it.
Okay. Well, you guys have been super to visit with. I enjoyed it thoroughly. And you have a great story to tell, so I hope I can do it justice.